brought to you by Burr and Foreman, broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia. It's time for Results Matter Radio, where we bring you pertinent business information and offer real-life solutions to help drive desired results for you, whatever your business may be. Now, here are your hosts, Elizabeth Gordon and Lee Cantor.
Good morning. It's Tuesday, January 8th, 2013, and you're listening to Results Matter Radio on Business Radio X. I'm Elizabeth Gordon. It's great to be back here in the studio. Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year.
Of course, Dana Barrett is with me today to produce the show, and we have a great show.
We do.
We've been having a good time in the studio.
Already.
I know. So it's going to be a great show today. Just warning you, look out. Our show is going to focus today on Hub Atlanta, and my guests are Michelle Morgan, who's the founder and managing director at Hub Atlanta, and Janelle Jolly, who is founder and CEO at Sidewalk District. Ladies, welcome.
Thank you very much for having us.
Hi, good morning.
So, Michelle, let's start with you. You founded Hub Atlanta 3 years ago?
Just about 3 years ago. Think it's based on, you know, the date of the LLC versus the date you open.
Right,
the
I'm
doors.
Not going to like hold you accountable to the exact number here, but approximately.
Yeah.
And it's a shared workspace and accelerator for businesses. So what does that mean?
So basically, what that means is that on the face of it, if you show up and you knock on the door and you come in, what you'll see are a whole bunch of places to sit down, plug in your laptop, log on to the Wi-Fi, lots of coffee. And then conference room and insulated call rooms and things like that. So that's the shared workspace side of it. But that's just the point of entry to a whole bunch of things that entrepreneurs and people who run their businesses, a lot of people call them solopreneurs, consultants, freelancers, things like that. And even people who are in what they consider to be a growth stage. So their company is in one place and they're ready for it to be in a slightly elevated place or a slightly different reformed place. There's access to all of these opportunities to either conceptualize or execute on developing or redeveloping your business. And it comes down to either an individual program. We're introducing a couple of new programs this month that are very tactically oriented around sales and marketing and social media and things like that. Or you can come to us and say, I have this idea and I really need some external structure to get, you know, to this point. And sometimes you know what that point is and sometimes you don't. And so we do immersive, intensive experiences where you might come in for 12 to 16 weeks and do an incubator or an accelerator or a true let's sit down and soup to nuts, take your idea, write a business plan, create a marketing plan, come up with a pro forma, and get you ready to either launch because you have a customer or go after investment or something like that.
I totally need that.
We can do that for you, Dana.
Okay.
It's much more than just a place. There's a lot of programming, educational opportunities. What types of people are members at the Hub?
Well, Janelle, who's here with me today,
right?
is, I would say,
perfect example.
She's a fantastic example, but, you know, not everybody can be Janelle. She's amazing.
This is true. This is true.
Although, so we have a really diverse group of members. We were talking earlier in the studio about our sales training classes are actually going to be taught by a rabbinical student who's had a long history in sales and went back to, I don't know the right word for it. I'm such
rabbinical
a wasp.
School.
Is it rabbinical school?
We'll
I was going to call it seminary.
I think I think it might be seminary.
Is it really?
We can.
Okay.
We can
look
that.
It up.
It's
okay.
Passed. That'll work.
So yeah. And then we have all kinds of people who are, I'd say our youngest member is a high school student, actually, who's trying to start a 3D printing business.
Oh, wow.
And our oldest member is more than 70. What you get on the older side, they tend to be successful entrepreneurs or successful business people, and they are looking to give back to the community, or sometimes they're actually looking for their next thing to do, the next team to join or something like that. They have this really deep experience. They want to talk about it, and they're fascinating people. And hands down, some of the most encouraging people I've ever met in my life, you know, just there to tell you, like, you can do this. It's not a big deal. Everybody's afraid of this. Like, just keep moving forward. Yeah.
So do you find that a lot of times members are getting in conversations with each other and doing business or helping each other with their business? Does that just happen organically, just being a part of the community?
It happens in a couple different ways. Definitely organically, all day long. One of the great things about the Hub, I worked by myself in my own studio, for some reason, in a barn in the middle of nowhere for a couple of years. It was excruciating. Because you have these really minor questions like this way or this way, you know, and you, I was an architect at the time, and ideally what you want is somebody to say like, do you like this color blue or this color blue, you know, before you show the client.
Right. It's great to have somebody to bounce those ideas off of, yeah, and just get other opinions.
And then sometimes it's just like, how's your day? What's going on? Hey, you were dealing with that problem or you had that big meeting or something the other day. Like, how did it go? So it's that level of it. And then I've actually seen members get into these really amazing conversations.
I was just about to tell that story. Myself and there's another founder, Jason. He's the founder of the Go Generation. And I have he was drawing something out on the whiteboard, and I'm nosy. So I went up to him and was like, okay, what is this? And he was explaining, you know, this is da-da-da-da. We literally got into like a three-hour sparring thing like on a Friday. My blood sugar dropped. I was about to like pass out because we were like going at it for 3 hours nonstop. And people were just coming downstairs and just sitting and like got a bag of popcorn, just watching the nonsense ensue. But like things like that happen just randomly all the time at the Hub. Just like he calls it, what did he call it? Robust like conversation. He had like a very nice like consultancy term, but we were like fussing for like 3 hours. I was like, no, you're doing that all wrong. I think you're thinking about that wrong. No, but this is no. You really don't know that right now. So yeah, that's what everyone references. Just like, you guys having spirited debate today again, but that sort of thing happens all the time at the Hub.
Absolutely. And I mean, Janelle refers to it as nosy. I would say nosy and opinionated is the best possible person you could sit down next to when you're trying to start a business.
That's why no one sits next to me.
That's
during
not true.
The day.
That's not true. Everybody wants to sit next to you.
when somebody is starting a business, they do need a lot of help, because as the entrepreneur, you're kind of supposed to know everything about everything, and
really
most
you know
likely,
nothing about
you know nothing.
Anything
a lot. So having all those other people on your team is really quite valuable. So you've been offering programs for the last 3 years to your members.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've learned a lot along the way.
Oh gosh. The gap between what people say they will pay loads of money and sit for 8 hours and listen to and what they'll actually listen to is wide sometimes. And it's surprising to me sometimes what people will sort of glue themselves to a chair for. The first program we ever introduced at the Hub is called Burning Plan, which the name is just to take off of Burning Man out in the desert. And so an entrepreneur or a team of entrepreneurs gets up, they present their whole idea, and we crowdsource a group of critics that are ideally relevant to what they're asking. And in a lot of pitches, what you do is you present the good face of everything. And we ask people to do that. And then we literally say, okay, now tell us what you don't know. Tell us the thing that you wouldn't tell the investor or the funder or the thing that you wouldn't tell the CTO you're trying to hire or...
Right, you know, the risk management part that you haven't worked out yet.
Right.
Exactly. This is not a marketing spiel. People seem to really love the idea of it, and they love the idea. Like, I call it a sort of community-wide hug. Like, it's okay, just tell us what's
full
wrong.
Full disclosure and acceptance.
Right.
Exactly, and we're going to help you brainstorm it. Janelle did that one a couple of months ago.
So
it sounds like it takes some courage to get up there.
So if I could do it all over again, and Michelle knows this, when I did my Burning Plan, it was right after I got back from spending a month out in the valley. So I was already exhausted from doing that whole like dog and pony show. So I came back. I was tired. I really should have asked to delay it, but I was just like, no, I can do this. It was a lot, because it's not that it's a lot, because when you're an early stage entrepreneur, you get used to, you know, presenting and pitching all the time. Like, that's just what you do in your sleep. You get into a rhythm. This one was a bit longer of a format, because it's like 20 minutes that
20
you present.
Minutes, yeah.
But I was completely exhausted from my trip, and just, and some of the people who were there, they, well, one guy, he was a, he's had a bit of experience in my space. So he was, you know, just making, I guess, suggestions like, well, why don't you just blow? And he just, he threw out me like a big pared down version of what I was doing. Like, why don't you just blah, blah, blah? Because that's, you know, really, that's a lot more easy and da, da, da. And normally something like that, you know, it's just like water that rolls off your back. Like, no, I can't do that because that's not solving the problem I'm looking to solve. But I like fell apart. And like the next day I came in and I was just like, well, come in tomorrow and talk to me more about what you're saying. I don't know why I did that. But, you know, we were like going back and forth. And then I feel like I freaked out and had a little bit of a meltdown. It was a Friday and Michelle came upstairs. She's like, go home. This is you tired. I've never seen you this ridiculous looking before. Go home. And I did. And it was fine next week. But it was a good exercise. And I'll probably do it again sometime soon. So it's a really good exercise. And I've been to a couple. And the entrepreneurs get a lot out of it. The community gets a lot out of it because we're able to learn more about, you know, upcoming startups or different idea stage things. So it's pretty beneficial all around.
I think for me too, the most I've learned about being an entrepreneur is from watching other people get up and present their ideas, because they're talking and you think, oh yeah, I would say it exactly like that. I would, that sounds amazing. That's fantastic. And then one of the critics will be like, okay, here's the tragic flaw in your plan.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh my God,
I didn't even think of that. Right.
It's like a train coming your way and you're like, oh, I'm standing on the tracks. Yeah. Oh my God, I need to go fix that. Yeah. And so you learn all these things just by sitting, you know, I always sit in the back of the audience and I think like, oh my God, the massive amount I've learned just from watching other people. And sometimes it's moments of genius too. You think like, oh, they've cracked the nut on a multi-sided business model, or you know, they explain something about how to establish a partnership relationship that would have never occurred to me. And, oh my God, this is incredible. So there are things like that. And those are kind of the really early days we were experimenting with, like, what do you do? And I come out of this architectural background where presentation and, like, getting up and talking about your ideas and critique is everything. Mm. And so I kind of dragged that kicking and screaming into the entrepreneurial space. But at the other end of the spectrum, I think there are these classic areas, and this is what I've learned through the programming side of Burning Plan. There are these classic areas that entrepreneurs get criticism. Like, they are by nature idea people. Mm-hmm. They are not necessarily and they might be incredibly talented in a particular area, or incredibly, in our space, because it's a lot of social entrepreneurs, incredibly passionate about something. Mm-hmm. They don't necessarily have every tool in the bucket. And a lot of times they're starting out. I did this with the Hub. Janelle's been in this place with Sidewalk District. You're starting out on your own, and you really do have to wear all the hats.
Yeah.
At least for a little while to get the ball rolling.
Right.
So this is where, this year, we're introducing some much more tactical classes. So I mentioned sales and social media. So these kind of go together. Like, they're the sales and marketing are the thing that most entrepreneurs know the least about. Mm-hmm. They're the most afraid of.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah, right.
The most important early on to get that initial interest and to get some revenue in the company.
Right. They're the most petrifying pieces of your business, but they're the most necessary, and I guess that's why they're petrifying. But yeah, but like the sales, I mean, nothing, go ahead.
Because if you have the best process in the world but nobody's buying,
who cares? Who cares?
Exactly. So
right. And if you have
really matters.
And if you have a stupid product and great packaging, pet rock, anybody?
Hello, you know, she a pet?
Excuse me, you can make millions.
Oh yeah, and never look back. It's amazing. And I think the thing that's interesting to me about it, so you know, having been a creative and having been, I'm what they call the presentation monkey in the design group. So very used to getting up and talking to a crowd about, you should definitely want to build what we've drawn. That's not sales though. Mm-hmm. And until I had to actually sell the Hub, I really thought like, oh, this is really sales. That's not rainmaking. Like, because there's no rejection in that. Right. And so the thing that you learn about sales is that it's the part of your business that's the most vital. It's terrifying because it's so personal.
Yes.
And yet not personal at all. Yeah. And it's the part of the business that if you are walking into it with the wrong mentality of, I got to have this sale, I got to win, this is my scorecard, it will chew you to a
thousand demoralizing.
Pieces.
Yeah. I had one. So,
well, Janelle, why don't you tell us about your business?
Right. How about
Sidewalk
I tell
District
who
first,
I am.
And then
everyone's right. Like, who is this hype man
pitching
on the side who's just chiming in every sixth minute?
That's hi. Right.
I'm Janelle, Sidewalk District. We're giving local independent retailers a virtual sidewalk so that consumers no longer have to physically be in a local boutique, home decor, gift, pet, or bike shop to see what's being carried or to make a purchase. Now you can browse and shop a local store anytime, anywhere, from a phone, laptop, or tablet. So the quick and dirty way I usually explain this to people is that we're Etsy, but for brick-and-mortar retailers, so that fabulous females like yourself no longer have to schlep across town to your favorite boutique to see what they're carrying for, you know, the party you're going to this Saturday. Now you can just browse on your phone or while you're at your computer at work and see what they got and buy it online for convenience if you'd like, or go in store and pick up what you saw online.
Very cool. So if I live in Atlanta, I can shop local boutiques in Atlanta.
Yeah,
what or, if I live in it?
Or if you just got back from vacation in Chicago
right.
and you saw, Chicago, you know, there was a really nice boutique there that
the
you want to keep
cool
up with.
Sidewalks.
Yeah. Yeah, everywhere.
Or if you live in like Podunk somewhere, you can shop in the boutiques
somewhere.
In Atlanta.
Yeah, so you don't have to look like you're from
Podunk. Look at us all selling
somewhere.
Your stuff.
There we go.
Or if there's like an awesome store in Podunk nowhere and you were passing through and you bought something cool and then you do what I do, you give it to somebody else, break it, misplace it, whatever.
Like, I want another one.
Exactly. Right. There's that store.
There's that store.
Great. Brilliant.
Yeah, it's for everyone.
It genius.
Why, thank you.
Did we know we had a genius in the room, Elizabeth?
Yes. Don't lie to yourself. You knew it. You knew it.
So how did you come up with this idea? Because your background was not
I'm
like,
such an anomaly.
Straight along this line.
No,
and usually, you know, interesting people like yourselves take a curvy road to get to
circuitous route. That's what my mother calls it.
Yeah, that's my favorite word. And everyone enjoys it when I use it. So I have, like you said, a non-traditional path to the startup tech world. I moved to Atlanta in 2009 to go to grad school for a master's of public policy. And very practically, when I moved here, I didn't know where to shop. And I was really frustrated by that. And who really wants to like shop at a mall and look like everybody else? So I was really frustrated about that. So the idea just started off very small. It's just a shopping guide from city to city. Because when I was complaining about this problem, I was like, oh, Atlanta's awful. Like, you don't know where the boutiques or whatever are around
there's
town.
There's so many different pockets
right,
here.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So but, it does take you a little while
exactly.
to learn the landscape.
Exactly.
But all cities are like that.
Right.
Really.
But I didn't know that. I
right.
thought this was just Atlanta. So right. I'm like complaining to friends in New York and Chicago, San Francisco. And they're like, well, that's not an Atlanta problem. Like, I have the same issue here. And I've been here for a couple years. And I'm like, well, that's dumb. Like, let's look. Let's see if this can be fixed. So it started off really small as just a shopping guide city to city. And then after I found the lay of the land here in Atlanta, I still found that it was too difficult to shop locally when I wanted to. So it just sort of developed into what it is now. Literally after one night, I almost broke my neck trying to get to my favorite boutique because I needed an outfit for the next day. It was homecoming that weekend. And like because and my friend wanted me to pick her up on the way, but there was no way I was going to risk not getting there in time to physically be in the door to get. It was just it was a big bowl of nonsense. But I was like, yeah, this is dumb. I'm risking life and limb for a dress. What sense does that make? So I was just like, yeah, there's got to be.
I would totally risk life and limb for the right dress. Just
and
so
most women would.
Right,
right.
I mean, come on,
right? You got to be super fresh about it. So,
but if I could order it online and get it delivered,
right,
that'd be way better.
Right, exactly. Right, and not nearly kill yourself or five cats in the process. So that's how it happened.
Nice, mm-hmm. And so it's also a social enterprise.
Yeah.
And you mentioned that a lot of the businesses at the Hub are social enterprise. So let's just like explain exactly what social enterprise is and tell us how. Sidewalk District, you know, your angle.
Sure.
Yeah. So just Social Enterprise 101. It's a business. So it's a market-based solution. People are paying for something, and there's typically a profit margin of some sort. And they're using that model to solve some type of social problem. So you see this a lot in the developing world with people who are trying to solve problems in hunger, poverty, education,
water.
Lack of access to capital, water, all kinds of things. I think in the U.S. or what, you know, the developed world, it takes a slightly different face, which is what Janelle is doing with Sidewalk District, but absolutely categorically at least as important. So, yeah.
So, to most people, when I explain what I'm doing, you know, they like, oh, this is consumer web retail, like, you know, awesome. But I have to I have to take some time to also sort of caveat what I'm doing as like this is very much a social enterprise because when you're talking about patronizing a local independent retailer, you're talking about economic development on a micro level. So for instance, and I'm about to throw out some stats, so get ready to catch them. So when you patronize a local independent retailer, they have a higher impact per square foot than patronizing a local a chain that's in a city, and they have a higher economic impact by revenue. Like for every dollar you spend at a local independent, there's more money that gets recycled back into that community than would be the case if you shopped at, say, the biggest retailer in the world. We all know the name of that place. Also, you're also talking about. I just refuse to say that.
I don't think I do, but I don't want to ask.
They're based out of Arkansas, and
those jokers.
Those
okay,
guys.
Those jokers.
Those guys. Those jokers.
Sorry.
Those billionaire jokers, right? And then also, when you patronize a local independent retailer, you're also talking about increasing the wage base of the labor force, because retail associates at local independents make more as an aggregate than their counterparts at chains. You're also talking about it's also a tax equity issue, because the big chains, when they come to a city or a county or a town, they get a bunch of tax breaks to set up shop. Local independents do not. They have to pay their fair share. So mm-hmm. that's not shifting the tax burden onto private homeowners and the like. So everyone sort of takes it for granted, like, oh, I'm getting a dress, or I'm buying some really nice throw pillows at, you know, a local home decor store. But when you start pulling on the strings of the implications of what your dollars mean when you shop locally, it's very much an economic development play that I was able, and I came to this because of my master's. My concentration was in public budgeting and finance for my policy degree. But Michelle's like, oh, I didn't know that.
Wow.
But I guess I came to this because when I was in grad school, we were in the throes of the recession, just super awful. And, you know, you read stories all the time across the countries of, you know, local municipalities getting hammered because tax revenues have dried up. And, you know, not everyone, but a lot of people are looking for government to be a part of the solution, which is fine, but they take a while. But why not? Everyone's like, yeah. So why yes. not take some of that power back,
right.
for actions that are already being carried out on a day-to-day basis? And
create
interesting,
a sustainable
right,
economic
yeah. right. And that doesn't
solution.
Mean that you have to shop locally for everything that you have. But if you can make someone feel better about something that they're already doing, that can help buttress a community financially. And interestingly enough, we found that people who, like, let's say, you know, when you go and get something at a boutique or a local home store, you're not doing it for the altruistic, you know, shop locally thing. You're doing it because your perception of the product source there is that they're of a higher quality, that, you know, they're more unique. So we're not even throwing out the like, hey, you should do this to, you know, support your community. Like, you're already doing it because you want to. And
right.
You perceive,
rather have a dress
yeah,
from
you,
a boutique
yeah.
than Macy's
yeah.
or Target.
Yeah. yeah. So we're helping retailers do business better because they really need the tools, and we're just helping consumers shop easier where they already want to shop. So it's just yeah. it's a pretty big no-brainer.
I want to layer on one statistic. So Janelle was talking at the beginning of that about the flow of money, how much money stays in the local economy and how much money goes out. And a friend of mine is a money flow specialist. I don't even know exactly what you call this. A financial sustainability
really
consultant, and studies local money flows. And the statistic that she gave me was that 85 cents of every dollar that you spend in a local retailer stays in the local economy, mm-hmm. whereas 25 cents of every dollar yep. that you spend in a national chain mm-hmm. will stay in the local economy. And when you're talking
That's
about
amazing you know, to think about,
it's huge. But you know, some of the developing world issues that I mentioned were around water, education, and I didn't mention healthcare, but that is a huge one. And when you think about the issues that we run into in the city of Atlanta, water.
Yep.
Education.
Right.
Not necessarily healthcare. We have a huge healthcare system here, which is really interesting, and everything, homelessness, things like that. So not just the first round of effects that Janelle's talking about mm-hmm. the empowerment of people in local jobs created with higher dollar salaries and things like that, but those people are also paying taxes here mm-hmm. in the city and contributing to the rebuilding of our water system and the
money
and
the coffer for education. Yeah, it's and there's also environmental implications for building up local sort of retail districts, because it reduces suburban sprawl and water pollution and all of that, because you're not necessarily driving to, you know, the strip mall 5 miles down the road. Like, you can, you know, walk, you know, two blocks down the street and shop wherever. And that, so there's a lot of layers and subtleties to the social impact of what I'm doing. But the good thing is that I'm right at the intersection of, like, social enterprise and traditional tech startup. I can move pretty easily in either world, but I definitely, first and foremost, a social enterprise, and that's what drives what I do day to day.
Can I jump in? I have a quick question. I'm very intrigued.
Sure.
I used to own a local retail business, so I definitely understand what you're offering, and wished you had been around when I had my retail store.
Yeah.
But my question is, well, I have two questions. One is, where are you in the business right now?
Sure.
And then the second question is, I know as for independent retailers, one of the biggest challenges is having that online store, you know, getting all their inventory and keeping it up to date.
Sure.
It's not the sourcing of it. It's not the actually packaging up and sending the product. That's the easy part. Mm-hmm. So are you also providing them tools that make that easier? Is that part of the project?
Yes. So when looking at the problem of, so I decided that this needed to be done, but you have to, after deciding that this needs to be done, you have to do a systems analysis to understand why it's not being done. Because it's such a no-brainer. Like, it's like a duh. Like, why hasn't anyone done this yet? Well, let's figure out all the pieces. So to answer a couple of your questions, yes, the system is soup to nuts, like a full-in solution for the retailer and the consumer. So as you know, you own your own store. Did you use QuickBooks?
I did.
Okay. So most people have an automated POS, point of sale system, that handles their inventory management, and that's where they track sales and what have you. What we have to do and what we're doing is we have a cloud-based solution that piggybacks, if you will, on the store's POS system to shoot all of that buying information to the web portal, so that if you are carrying 10 Vera Wang throw pillows in store, that's reflected online. And if someone online were to buy one, now that inventory level is reflected in store. So now everyone is able to see that you have 9 to buy. And conversely, if someone were to come in store and buy one of those pillows, people online would be able to see, now I have 9 available to purchase in store. So we have that software that piggybacks on the in-store POS to synchronize in real time that buying information. That's number one. Another reason that we found that is a barrier to entry for local independents into the e-commerce space is that if you wanted your own e-commerce solution, you'd have to photograph all of your products and upload them and manage them, and you don't have time for that. Your best efforts are spent giving the best customer service in the stores, sourcing the best products. Your job is to make the buying experience as good as possible. I didn't say that correctly. Anyway, your job is to establish your store's brand and broadcast that out to everyone else. So what we're doing is we're taking the responsibility that you have for that inventory, that inventory population, off of your hands. We're going directly to the vendors and designers of the products you carry in your store, and we're programming their lookbooks into our back end so that when you inventory items as you normally would, the system recognizes SKU 115A and it automatically populates in the web portal. So you don't have any extra work. Our retailers don't have any extra work. We do everything for you because we have to, because that's not your job. You're not an IT specialist. So we're doing everything, and so, you know, it's just as easy as you running your store as you normally do. We just a couple of extra steps, like letting us know when you buy, you know, when you make your buy, so we can go to your vendors and designers and get those products. But we're bringing you the customers. We're allowing your existing customers to be able to access you whenever they want, however they want. So it's just a really no-brainer solution.
How much would this service cost? Let's say you're in the earlier stages,
sure.
But let's say it's up and running, yeah, and Dana's got her store,
sure,
and she wants to contract with you.
Sure. So we charge our retail partners a flat fee of $100 a month, and then we take 5% of the sales made online and mobile. So you know, one of a consumer of yours.
Why weren't you around when I
know it's like, and we'll be launching our private beta here in Atlanta in February, mid-February. So excited. But yes, it will cost a retailer $100 a month, month to month. Like, we know that retailers can be stretched pretty thin. So there's no, like, you know, year in advance, you know, commitment, because our job is to establish our value to you and make you happy and help you do business better. If we're not doing that, you don't need to keep paying us and keep us around. So $100 a month and 5% of sales online and mobile. So, and that helps preserve your margins pretty well, because anything above 5% is kind of eating away at your profit. So we found that is a fair cut.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nice. So how would that compare to me building my own site that did the same thing?
So
if I was a crazy ambitious retailer.
Did you guys plan this dog
no,
and pony
not
show?
Not at all. These are just checking. The kind of questions I have. I'm like, how does that work?
So if you were a retailer, Michelle's boutique store, if Michelle had
selling
her own store.
Awesome stuff.
Michelle's boutique selling awesome since 2013. So Michelle were to have her own store and she wanted to set up her own autonomous site, she'd have to worry about, well, there are services out there to make things easier, but she'd have to worry about her own hosting, her own marketing, her own online SEO, and again, her own inventory management. And if she
getting a headache already,
and if she wanted to set up her own site, her own e-commerce, autonomous e-commerce site, she would have to double enter her inventory data. So every time there's a sale made online, she'd have to reconcile that online sale separate than her in-store sale, and that's two times the work for. And Michelle, if she's a local independent retailer, we're gonna generalize and say that she's a technophobe, because many of them are. So
I am.
So all of that extra effort would have very little, if any, ROI, because she's probably not pairing that with any online marketing to actually get people to know that she has an online site where she's selling. Because interestingly enough, I literally went all around Metro Atlanta. What was it, two summers ago, to take stock of all the stores that would fit the demo for my site, and to see who was doing business online and mobile. So we found that 76 out of every 100 local independents here in Metro Atlanta are not e-commerce enabled, which interestingly enough, or not so interestingly enough, almost exactly mirrors the stats that the American Express did about local businesses as it relates to e-commerce. They found that 77% of local independents aren't doing any business online and mobile. So it's just that it's too cumbersome, and it's really cumbersome, and it can be really expensive if you're going to do it correctly. So, I mean, what are the most prized commodities that a local independent has is their time and money. So if we can drastically reduce the cost and make it very affordable and almost totally eliminate the time that you would have to put in yourself.
Yeah.
And it's a great value proposition.
Yeah.
It really is. And I mean, for me, it brings up probably the most important point, because you said you could do all of this stuff, but if you're not pairing it with an online marketing campaign, mm-hmm. you're probably not leveraging the capacity of it.
Correct.
And so then the moment you say that, I think like, oh my God, now I have this whole other thing I have to go learn about. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And that's why if you're, you know, a large national retailer, you know, you have $100 million budget for the e-commerce side of your operations, because you have a whole marketing department. You have a whole, you know, tech department that can handle everything. And that's why they're the ones who have virtually cornered this, you know, $100 billion, almost $200 billion now, market of e-commerce, and the emerging market, which is really hot, of mobile commerce or m-commerce. So I just felt that it was unfair that local independents are shut out of these markets when a lot of people want them, a lot of consumers want them to get in this market, but they don't have the tools. They don't really have the capacity or the money. So where's the startup that can help them out with this? I am that startup. I have a couple of competitors, but we're going to kill them. We're actually already killing them, and we haven't even launched. That's another story. But
part of your experience in building a tech startup, mm-hmm. as often is the case, is fundraising.
And oh, my oh my God!
Oh my God! You've had some experience raising money in Atlanta,
and on the West Coast, right?
As well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and I'm sure that your experience at the Hub probably helped prepare you for some of this.
Yeah.
Because it's not an easy job.
Oh, my God. So, no, it's not an easy job. And the way I came to the Hub was through, there was an accelerator in the spring called Village Capital, and it's an accelerator for social entrepreneurs that was held out of the Hub. So that's how I even came to know that the Hub existed. So through Village Capital, it was a really good program. I was able to be in a cohort with a lot of other very talented, very smart, very ambitious entrepreneurs. And through that program, because you have a series of pitches through the program to help your ranking, because it's a peer evaluated accelerator as opposed to all the others. But so through that program, I got really good at pitching and communicating what I do, which is that's something you have to get down quickly. Not quickly. That's something you have to get down if you're going to sell something. So by the end of that program, I had become a Jedi warrior of pitching, if you will. And directly after that program, there was a Black Founders conference here in Atlanta. I am Black. I'm a founder, just for those listening.
This is radio.
So I went to the conference, and a couple of friends of mine were helping to organize, and they were like, okay, you need to pitch. And I almost didn't, because I needed a nap that day, so I almost like did not go to sleep, but I got up off my rump and I went, and I won that competition, which won me a trip out to San Francisco for the for their big San Francisco conference. So I was out there in September. I won that competition, and that really boosted my visibility in terms of the the West Coast investing community. Had a lot of good meetings out there, made a lot of good contacts. I came back and I was a little frustrated because from all of the meetings that I had out west, just about every meeting was predicated upon the assumption that I was moving out there, and I had to move out there to get the money that was available. And I don't want to. I mean, San Francisco is really awesome. Don't want to move there. Not enough sun, and it's crazy expensive. No, thank you. So I came back and I was like, I came back and I bust to Michelle, of course, and I was just like, this isn't fair. I think I'm gonna have to move, and I don't want to. And she's like, no, you don't. She's like, I have an agenda to keep you here. So let's
do
that.
In case anybody was confused, I have a huge agenda.
So she put me in touch with some folks, and one of the people she put me in touch with is a big player in one of the investment groups here in Atlanta. He loves what I'm doing, and he had the same issue when he was starting his companies, that West Coast guys wanted him to move out there. So he was just like, we're going to do what we can to keep you here, Janelle, so you apply, and blah. I was like, all right, I got you. Thank you. Thank you. So raising money in Atlanta is really harrowing, but it's been harrowing for me, but it's not, it depends on who you are. It depends on what you're going into and who you know. I'm not from Atlanta, so I don't have like a family name people can reference down here that can help you out a good deal. What I'm doing is not a typical Atlanta startup, so that can sort of count against me. But and so when I really got really into my startup, you know, I was told by several people, you know, there are certain rules to raising money in Atlanta, like, you know, you have to meet this requirement, that requirement, that requirement, usually to get some money. And I'm like, okay, but then I come to find out not everyone has to play by those rules. So, I mean, don't take my fundraising journey as sort of, people don't necessarily have to extrapolate my funding journey to generalize, because I've just heard some really crazy stuff like, oh, so-and-so doesn't have any customers and no team, and they've got, you know, a seven-figure investment. Oh, okay. Yeah, that's awesome. But I mean, you know, it happens like that for some people. That's not the rule, but I mean, I've heard enough exceptions to be envious, if I can be honest.
I think funding sometimes feels like lightning striking. And, you know, just full disclosure, I had a very long dating life, and so I like to talk about how almost everything is similar to dating. because, you know, it went on for so long, I've got to use it for something. So I think that a lot of times looking for capital is much like dating. And we go out there and we think, like, I need to get that person to say yes to me. I need to get that person to say yes to me. And really what you have to do, and I think Janelle would second this, is you have to find the money that is also the right relationship for mm-hmm. you. There is no angel investment. There is no loan. There is no nothing that does not come with a relationship on the back end.
Yeah.
And I think it was really satisfying when Janelle went to go talk to the guy here in Atlanta who said, like, no, we're going to do what we have to do to keep you here. That's the right relationship. Those mm-hmm. are all the, I don't know what the opposite of a red flag is, but those are all the good signals. Like, yes, like, mm-hmm. give me more of this. And I think once you see the first person who's really on your side and mm-hmm. you see how they behave and you understand, like, oh, that feels like a really good fit, mm-hmm. you can go out into this landscape. Atlanta is a big city with a lot of money washing around. So it's very easy mm-hmm. to think, oh, all money, all conversations about money, those are good conversations. It's mm-mm. so hard.
Yeah, but that's tough to learn also. Like, that's definitely what I've come to understand, is that you don't just want money. You don't just want the first dollar that passes yeah. by. You want someone who, A, believes in what you're doing, first and foremost. B, has a bit of domain expertise. That's not always necessary, but that can help sort of guiding you through sort of things yeah. you might need to know. But someone who really believes in what you're doing is of utmost importance, because, I mean, especially here, and we've had this conversation before, Atlanta has an interesting sort of, what is the word? Inferiority complex?
Oh, they treat themselves like a second-class citizen. It's crazy. Yeah. Like, oh, we're going to be that. You know, I hear this all the time. And I know people don't mean anything negative by it, but they'll say, like, we want to be the Silicon Valley of the Southeast. And it's like, no, you don't.
No, you
want to be Atlanta.
Yeah.
Like, just be Atlanta. Right. It's yeah. awesome. We have Fortune 500s. We have amazing customers. We have incredible wealth, huge real estate.
That's true. We say we're like the Hollywood of the South, too.
Exactly.
Why?
Yeah.
No,
why?
We're just Atlanta.
We're
yeah.
not. We're the Hollywood of... We're not Hollywood. Hollywood. We're right. just awesome
right.
Atlanta.
Right. Like, you're just Atlanta. Right.
Yeah. And yeah, it's... funny. I mean, we have all these amazing things, and I think, you know, it's like that girl you knew in college where you think, like, God, she's so pretty. She has no idea.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
Yeah.
Just, like, be your awesome self.
Right.
Like, yeah,
and
get
so
out
can
there.
Be, and especially for someone in consumer web, it can be really, because Atlanta does not think, especially the sort of startup community here, doesn't think of itself as a consumer, like, capable of handling. And I'm like,
they think of themselves as infrastructure more.
Right.
But you, to me, you are infrastructure.
I am, but they don't understand it. And it's like, whoa.
Did
don't
the tech
know
community hear
that?
Janelle is infrastructure.
I am, right. I'm not handling, you know, like, uranium cake. Like, we can do this, guys. Let's put our brains together and let's attack the problem where no one's gonna die. So it's just, but so it's, it can be difficult tackling these things, but it can be done. You have to go back to these people, like, I understand what you're saying, you're wrong, and let me tell you why you're wrong. We can do this.
I think I'll say, like, I mean, in certain ways people outside of Atlanta would refer to Atlanta as in particular areas, a branding capital. I mean, mm-hmm. come on, one of the largest companies in the world sells water with sugar and bubbles in it. Like, that's amazing. Like, they've made a lot of money doing that. And then we're a logistics capital. You know, we have a lot of intellectual capacity in the city, and that combined with a lot of entrepreneurial spirit. I think Southerners by nature, and the Southeast mm-hmm. in and of itself, people are very much like, I want to do my thing. I want to make my mark and put my stamp on it. Like, all of those things, they create the right intersection for an awesome, really ambitious entrepreneurial community. Mm-hmm. And I think people need to kind of shake this thing off about, like, oh, Atlanta is a backwater, or, you know, that we're backward thinking or something. We're just not. That's not my experience
right.
of Atlanta.
Right.
Good. So we're almost out of time. It's been great getting to know you both, and I can see why it's so fun to hang out at the Hub.
Oh, well, thank you.
For those of you listen to Results Matter, you know we always like to end the show by talking about results mm-hmm. and the results that matter to you.
Oh,
so,
gosh.
Michelle,
yes.
let's start with you and talk a little bit about the results.
The results. So I mentioned my agenda earlier, of which I have a huge agenda. But I would say the first metric, the first thing that matters to us is the size of our community. So right now we're at about 125, and it's 125 amazing members. I and my new counterpart at the Hub, Greg Kaderi, who has a great background establishing Greg a company
is
called
awesome.
She's incredible. She established a company called Wired and Fired, which a lot of people in Atlanta would know. It was a high-end
paint your own pottery
store. So very similar in nature around community and the facilitation of somebody else's goal. So we're really excited, and we've set this really ambitious goal. We're ready to open our new bigger space. We have a couple of pieces to put in place for that. We have set a goal in this first quarter that we'd like to double our community.
Nice.
So that would hit 250. And then beyond that, we want to expand our reach. So over the 3 years that I've been doing this, we've planted these seeds for relationships across the Southeast in the U.S. in areas of intellectual capital, human capital, financial capital, all of these things that we have maybe finally cracked the nut on how to really share that information with our members and leverage it for their good, and really create a lot of connectivity. So that's our primary area where results matter. I think we're also looking at, you know, what are the metrics that a business like ours needs to track? So if Janelle went out and, you know, secured $300,000 to $400,000 worth of capital and then turned around and hired three people, I look at that like, yay, Janelle. But I also look at it like, yay, Hub. You helped somebody secure capital and expand their company. So we want to grow jobs. We want to launch companies. The saddest, best, most awesome thing that happens at the Hub is when a company gets too big for us. And, you know, they say, oh, Michelle, I'm so sad, but we have to rent office space. Don't be sad. Like, that's what we're dying to see happen. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Now, you've got even if people want to find out more about joining the Hub,
yes,
they can go to...
You can go to www.hubatlanta.com.
You can also hear about it on the show today.
Oh, yeah.
They have a special bonus.
If you'll mention Business Radio X, we will give you 1 month free. I wrote it down, and then I walked away from what I wrote down. I'm sorry. I never – see, I'm not good at
sales either. If you sign up for a year.
Oh, thank you. If you sign up for a year, we'll give you 1 month free.
Nice bounce.
This applies to all segments of membership. So we have our events segment, which is the Hub Connect, and that's about coming for these classes and amazing things. We have a huge social media set of sessions that we're introducing this year. So when Janelle mentioned online marketing, if you don't know how to do it, come on over. Kenzie Biggins from Uniquely Defined will walk you through it, and you will be awesome. And
she is a social media ninja.
She rocks the house.
Yeah,
she's in Philly today advising one of the largest headhunting firms in the U.S. about their social media. She's got some serious street cred. So it also applies to our co-work memberships, our organizational memberships. So if you're a big nonprofit who's trying to get into the social enterprise space, trying to learn about it, understand about it, expand your network there, we have a special type of package for you. And then when we move into our new space, private offices, bigger events, lots of social stuff. And we have happy hour on Thursday night. So
hey,
come on over. Yeah.
Terrific. Now, Janelle, let's turn to you. And let's talk about results.
Sure.
What are the results that matter to you most these days?
So getting our private beta launch has been sort of a long time in the works, because I had to get a little bit of capital in the door to sort of build this back-end factory that the company is going to be running on. And I got that when I was out in California from the pitch competition I won. So we'll be launching private beta here in February. And then from there, we're just, you know, going to scale and annihilate the competition by the end.
Just a little tiny thing.
I mean, just, you know, just sort of world domination.
So if people want to go ahead and bookmark the website.
Sure. So we're putting up the new site. The new site will be up at the beginning of next week so that we can finally start building that user list for our private beta launch with email capture and whatever. We just want to find out a little bit about the lovely people that will be brave enough to help us be our first users, test the system when it's up. But check back on Monday, sidewalkdistrict.com. We'll be doing some email capture, but we'll be launching here in February. And then by the end of 2013, we should be in at least 4 different cities. We're starting in Atlanta, and we're scaling from the Southeast out, because that's where the need is the most, because the Southeast isn't that walkable. So the ability to discover, you know, local stores gets hindered a bit. But that's where the focus is getting gearing up for this launch and, you know, being awesome about it. Because literally there are some women who like email me like every month, like, are you up yet? Are you up yet? Like, when is it happening? When is it? Come on, Jen. I'm like, okay, like it's happening now. Just relax. So
it's like that old commercial for that something at Christmas where the woman's at the window going, open, open.
Yep. Right, exactly. That is how a lot, even some of the men, I get fussed at by some of my guy friends and like, what? Like, it's not just for girls, is it? Like, I could have used this last week when I was, and I'm like, yeah, okay, we'll see if you can, because, I mean, the online shopping is different for men than it is for women, but we're starting with women, our focus is on women, but if you want access to our private beta, check back on the website, sidewalkdistrict.com, next Monday. It'll probably be up by Friday, but check back on Monday just to be sure, so we can get you lined up so that you can be a part of the awesomeness of annihilation that is to ensue.
Well, it sounds like you both have a very exciting year ahead of you. That's all the time we have for today's show.
Thank you for having us. I want to thank my guests.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Michelle Morgan and Jeanette Jolly. Definitely check out The Hub.
Thanks.
And Dana Barrett.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Dana. To learn more about Hub Atlanta, visit hubatlanta.com. For Burn Foreman's Results Matter Radio, I'm Elizabeth Gordon. Thanks for tuning in. Have a great day.
This has been a joint production of Burr and Foreman and Business Radio X. Burr and Foreman is a full-service law firm with offices across the Southeast. If results matter to you and you want them to matter to your law firm, please give Burr and Foreman a call at 404-685-4337. For more information and to find the right attorney for you, visit burr.com. That's B-U-R-R.com.